This podcast is brought to you with limited interruption by Rudy Luther Toyota. Whether looking for an exciting brand new Toyota, a certified pre-owned vehicle, or getting quality routine maintenance and service for your vehicle, Rudy Luther Toyota is the place to go. Rudy Luther Toyota, the southeast corner of 394 and 169 in Golden Valley. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It is the Matt McNeil Show for your Wednesday. Jeff McGillicuddy Stein joining us here in just a little bit to talk about, just a few things. You know, Brett, we have been fascinated by this idea that people needed a streamlined system to get Taco Bell.
Are you talking that Taco Bell / bank that they have?
Yeah, the bank that's been converted into a Taco Bell. And apparently, and they have come up with the new modern, catch this, the technology they're using on this, a chute. Yes, a chute, because I guess a catapult is just, a little too high tech for them. A chute to get your food. And we have mocked it enough, but you know what? Don't you dare come after my estate. Now, I have to refresh everyone's memory about something here before, because I'm going to talk about something called Sonny D. Now, you might be saying to yourself, Sonny D, it sounds familiar. Is that a musician or something? No, I don't know. It could be a Sonny D. I don't know. I don't know if there is one. But no, not this time. Is it some sort of performance artist or something like that, maybe? Nope. It's that Tang ripoff.
Sonny D, all right.
Sonny D, the juice, has decided to pick a fight with Minnesota. Bring it, biatch. Let's go. All right, so the brand arrived, wars have arrived, with Sonny D taking a swipe at Minnesota because of its new Taco Bell Defy and the defies for keeping it in your body. But needless to say, I'll let that be a surprise for you. Go enjoy. Encased at the first ever Defy concept from Taco Bell, opened this week in Brooklyn Park, a bank-like haven for phone orders with food delivered to drivers via an elevator chute. The trough is coming up next. Get ready for the Taco Bell trough. That's KFC. Sorry. Well, the social media team behind Sonny D, what happens when a jar of Tang goes to the bathroom, was impressed by the structure itself, but then decided to go after us. Here is the tweet from the drink known as Sonny D. This is incredible. What's it doing in Minnesota? Man, a product with your pedigree is daring to try to take on someone else. You godforsaken syrup water. You bilge pump that doesn't have the style and pizzazz. Dear Lord, Sonny D decides to try to take a swipe at us. It's not going well for Sonny D. And God bless you. Minnesotans, love you. I love you. The Ohio-based, the orange drink comes from Ohio. Akron's generous orange orchards.
Yeah, Ohio.
Toledo's phenomenal orange field. Oh, that's right. Is there orange in there? It's like, okay, they added flavor to a can of orange spray paint, for God's sakes. I can do this all day. I really can. Or Sonny D, what are you doing, man? Come here, let me pant you and pop you right in the old,
So you're not going to be getting their sweatshirt that's on their Twitter headline, cover picture? You can get yourself a Sonny D sweatshirt.
No.
Swag is finally here. Shop now.
I'm presuming the D is because they couldn't. That's the best grade they could when it came to describing what an orange is. You know, why, if your name is Sonny, why do you make so many people cry? Yeah, you're from Ohio. You godforsaken. Oh. Here are some of the fine responses. Couldn't get the attention you were looking for, Sonny D. I guess it's the most anyone's talked about you since the 1990s. Oh, I'd go back to the 1980s if you want to know the truth. I don't think it's been that recent since they've been talked about. Wow, what a burn from a Dollar Tree Tang. That's from Ernest Warhol, who goes with Brian-MPLS. Nicely done, sir. Chris, this is incredible. Things never said by anyone drinking Sunny D. Bravo, Chris. Kevin Lilly, I know I like Capri Sun better. Nicely done. Let's see. Anyone else here? So this is the Sunny D original tweet is once again, this is incredible. What's it doing in Minnesota? Meh. Bartouche is their response. What are you doing next to the orange juice?
at least they're better than the purple stuff.
Isn't that the same?
That's one of their famous ads from the 90s where a kid shoves, we don't want the purple stuff. We want Sunny D. All right, man.
God, if your parents hate you, you drink Sunny D.
Oh, those are big commercials in the early and mid-90s on kids' TV shows. I used to see those all the time, and they always made fun of the purple stuff.
If we basically got every store in this state to chuck their Sunny D out and not order any new ones, how long before Sunny D cowers and comes to us and begs Minnesota for forgiveness?
Would it really hurt their sales? Is anyone buying it anyways?
I don't really know. It's yeah, that's $20 they're going to miss. God. Sunny D, what are you doing? Know your lane, man.
To be honest,
stay in your lane. What are you doing, you punks?
To be honest, I thought they were one of those old, like, 90s advertisers that went out of business years ago. I didn't know they were still around.
It's like a Happy Chef. What the hell? Yeah, where are the... That's what it feels like. It feels like when you go into a town and it's like a Howard Johnson's. What the hell? I didn't even think those were still alive. There's the one last Howard. Sunny D. Do you like cavities with your drinks? Well, then, have we got a beverage for you? I am not joking. I have had Sunny D once. I think I was like 15. We were out playing soccer or something like that. I took one sip of it and I threw it out. I'm like, what in the hell is this? Boy, if I could have, you know, water without the texture of water and orange juice that really only, you know, imagine what that orange floor polish tastes like. There you go. Delicious Sunny D. Not even the astronauts want anything to do with you, man. And they're out in space. Oh no, I'll starve. Oh God, oh yeah, it's been a good run. I'll eat it. That's all. I don't want that. Now, mind you, we are dogging on Sunny D to defend a Taco Bell, but well, or at least, you know, a Taco Bell proxy. But Sunny D, stay in your damn lane, man. What are you doing? Just pound on those guys. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. Sunny D. Jeez. God, I didn't know you had MTV Classic here. Wow.
God. I'm still just stunned they're around.
The first thing is when I saw this story, I did too. Is like, Sonny D, is that a new musician? Sonny D's done? Who's Sonny D? Oh my God. By the way, I actually think the company has gone under and all those bottles that are still on the shelves are from about 20 years ago. Just FYI. Drink up. Who likes a thick beverage?
Maybe it's a fake Twitter account. Sonny D's been out of business, but the social media... They have some person who decided to start a social media account on behalf of Sunny D.
They got the blue check mark. They got the blue check.
You are correct.
Oh, my God.
Oh, I feel kind of bad. They only got 67,000 followers. For a national company, they should have a lot more than that.
Dear Lord, I think Schechter's got more. Oh, my God. Sunny D, where the D stands for 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205 is the phone number. Wow. Stay in your lane. All right. So I want to start today because I'm going to be heavy in politics this first hour. And I mean, this morning, I don't know if you saw, I mean, a lot of people were making the rounds about the San Francisco District Attorney. Bowden was projected to be recalled by voters Tuesday at a loss to progressives who support his mission of criminal justice reform. If he is removed from his position as top prosecutor of the majority Democratic city, Mayor London Breed will appoint an interim DA until the election. Bowden was elected in 2019 as part of a movement of progressive prosecutors across the country, including Larry Krasner in Philadelphia, pushing back on decades of tough-on-crime policies that increased mass incarceration and disproportionately criminalized Black and Latino people. Since entering office, Bowden, a former public defender whose parents spent decades in prison, has kept his campaign promises of eliminating cash bail, holding police accountable, and diverting people from the criminal legal system. The recall effort was led by an organization called San Franciscans for Public Safety, which gathered over 50,000 signatures to put the recall on the ballot. The group was claimed the crime was on the rise in the city and blamed the progressive DA. But a San Francisco Chronicle analysis found the violent crime in San Francisco actually declined during the pandemic. While murders and shootings have increased in recent years, this tracks with trends across major U.S. cities. Most property crimes are also trending toward their pre-pandemic levels, so... This wasn't necessarily because he had failed. This was because he basically made some people mad. The recall is funded by wealthy donors, including William Oberndorf, a Republican mega donor, the Northern California ACLU, a local union chapters of the as well supported Bowden with donations against the recall campaign. Some of the critics pointed to growing anti-Asian violence over the past 2 years in San Francisco, but such hateful attacks occurred in cities across the country amid the COVID-19 pandemic. So basically, all right. So, well, I think the thing that triggered me to want to talk about this was because this is the San Francisco District Attorney's race. And apparently, as all the media in this country immediately said, as the DA's race in San Francisco goes the rest of the country. And that's not necessarily true. I don't think that this is a bellwether because, well, first of all, okay, this is San Francisco. It's, as Jeff Stein says, and we'll talk to Jeff coming up here in a little bit, all politics is local. It's local politics. But I do want to bring up some things here, because I think there is a validity to some level of criticism here, because it is San Francisco. It is not exactly Kansas City or Nashville or pick a metro area where there is a fairly large contingent of conservatives in the metro area. It is San Francisco, where they go from liberal to, oh my God. And they were of the mindset that this guy had gone too far. Don't get me wrong, once again, though, it's misunderstanding some things. And in the case of Bowden, I want to talk about two things. The first one is going to be a little tough love for the progressives, for the far left of the party. Because in the same sense, I like to proudly say to myself, I am a moderate. I'm not a moderate. I'm a middle of the road Democrat. I'm not a moderate. I'm not a progressive. I'm an Al Gore Democrat. I'm in the middle of the party. I, on this show, have been very critical of moderate Democrats because most of the time is, oh, I don't want to do what the DFL wants me to do. Let me ask what the Republicans want me to do. And I'm like, geez, what are you guys doing? But there is a problem with the progressive side of the party that, to a point, is somewhat delusional. And what I mean by that is this. There are far more populist ideas on the far left than there are on the far right. As a matter of fact, I put some thought to this. I couldn't think of any real populist ideas from the far right. I couldn't think of one where there is a majority, a definitive majority of the people of this country agree with something from the far right. Nothing does. I mean, the border wall, I think at best was like 40%. You know, it just, that was at best. you know, it really is interesting to see the fact that they don't really have much. But that's not the same thing for the far left. The far left, I'll give you three things which in my lifetime have either come to fruition or have been fought and basically are populism on the far left. Gay rights, LGBTQ rights. That is a far left populism idea that has become mainstream because the vast majority of people do not believe in discriminating against other human beings. They just don't. Legalized marijuana. The first people that were talking about that years ago were the far left. And now you've gotten many states where it's legal. It's probably going to be legal in all 50 states before too long. There you go. And it's popular. That has gotten well over 50% of the population wanting that. And I think the bellwether for far left liberal populism is single payer healthcare, because I have yet to find a single poll that doesn't show that thing hitting about 60, 65, 70%. Of people are all for a single-payer healthcare system. That is a far-left progressive idea. So there are ideas that you get out there that you do resonate and do carry over, not only just to the rest of the Democrats, but even to moderate Republicans. The problem is, just because a few things resonate doesn't mean everything else will. Even within people who are relatively close to you politically. And there are a lot of progressives I know that think to themselves, well, all progressive ideas are popular ideas. No, some are, but not all of them. And the problem, when you talk about some of the things that he wanted to do here, that he was in regards to his campaign, eliminating cash bail, holding police accountable, diverting people from the criminal legal system. I think of all those things, you know, holding police accountable is one of the things I think most people, that's probably your most populist idea. These other ideas, there's some level of popularity to them, but it's not a majority. It's kind of like, it's like forgiving all college debt. Most people I know agree the cost of college is way too expensive and we should not be burdening most people with a lifetime of debt as soon as they come out of college. But at the same time, most of the people I know also don't think it should be for free. It should not be necessarily a free entity, that it should be dramatically less expensive, but it shouldn't be free. You have to understand, you can't just say, here's a liberal idea and it's going to sell. But there's also another problem here, which to a point is not the problem of liberals or progressives, but to a point it is. And I'll tell you what, I'll take a break. Come on back. I'll explain that in just in a second. Gary, I'll try to get your call in here before we get to Jeff Stein. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show. So one of the things when progressives get into office, not only do they have to step back and ask the question is, you know, if I push this extreme progressive policy, which is not necessarily popular, might only have 35, 40% of the population behind it, was part of your platform of why you got elected, not the main reason of it. Is there any traps there that could end up basically derailing my term in office? And yeah, there was a pretty obvious one that was there that existed. So there is a level of, you've got to have an idea of what you're going to do here. Now, I'm not saying you don't try things, but you got to have a much better game plan than just say, you see, we're going to put it into place and everybody's going to like it and then we're going to win in the end. And that's also part of the problem, too, is this idea that you get done with an election and it's over, sunset, arm in arm, marching down the street and roll credits. No. I want to make sure you understand, I don't care where you are in this country, The second you, as a Democrat, regardless if you're moderate, regardless if you're a progressive, you get elected, there are agents at work trying to figure out how to derail you and make sure at the very least you do not get another term. And at worst, basically, they can do what they do in California and they can recall you. And there, once again, what do you got? You've got right-wing groups. You've got right-wing money who the second this guy got into office were just waiting for the inevitable. You eliminate cash bail and all of a sudden someone who was eliminated, who was released because without bail commits a crime. Or you basically divert people from the criminal legal system, send them into counseling, send them into a work program, whatever the case may be, and the person kills two people. Because no matter what happens at that point, they are going to be able to take that one incident and make a heck of a lot of hay out of it. Doesn't matter if it's the only incident. And from what I understand about San Francisco, there were some problems here with this program being installed. They did have some issues here. I'm not criticizing them for trying to a point outside of you should have been aware that you are going to try something that was pretty damn risky. And along with that risk came a lot of potential for your enemies to vilify you and the program that you are trying to put out there. And that's exactly what happened here. Even though the crime numbers back him up, even though this is, you have one case where a person that you let go without bail commits another crime, all of a sudden you're sitting there saying, well, how is this working again? And you can sit there as like, well, I've got this 740-page strongly worded memo on why the bail system has been unfair. And it doesn't matter that you're right. It matters what public opinion is. And if they can turn San freaking Francisco against you, it tells you there are liabilities to your program. So you want to try something. You're a progressive. You get elected. One, ask yourself on anything, and I think this is a good thing to ask, how much support am I going to have from the population to put this through? You know, I'm not saying you don't try, but if you already are knowing that it's going to be only 30% of the people are backing what you're trying to do, know that if it goes wrong, it's going to go wrong and badly for you. And so this is an important lesson to learn, that you can try things, but you need to have the full picture aware. You're going into this saying, we're going to get rid of this and things are going to be perfect. And they weren't. And it costs the attorney general his job. So you have to learn, and maybe if he had had an answer, I don't know. I didn't really have too much time to dig through the news records of San Francisco. But if he didn't really, it doesn't seem like he had a real answer to, wait a minute here, if someone that you release and don't put into the criminal legal system commits a crime again, how is that making us safer? If you don't give people, if you get rid of cash bail and someone who commits a crime immediately goes out and commits another crime, how is that helping people of San Francisco? I commend you for trying, but you got to have a better game plan than this. And if I can, progressives, one last thing here. You have one of the most populist of populist ideas in your back pocket, single-payer health care. I have been flabbergasted that since 2018, which saw a major turnover of seats for the Democrats in this country, running on health care pre-pandemic. Why in God's green earth you guys have abandoned that issue for 2020 and 2022? Why do you guys feel like you haven't finished that job yet? And most people are still for a single payer healthcare system. So if I may, if you want to be a progressive and you want to sell progressive ideas, there's number one on your hit parade because that does resonate. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. Let's take a break. When we come back, Jeff Stein is going to join us. If you want to call in and you know rip me to shreds afterwards, it's fine. It's not that I'm against Democratic ideas. It's just that you guys got to see the traps that are coming. And if you don't see where the traps are coming, well, including the self-induced ones, that's on you. 952-946-6205, The Matt McNeil Show on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota, The Matt McNeil Show. Jeff Stein's our national and presidential expert, noted author. You can find his books over at Next Chapter Books in St. Paul, totallyiowa.com. The Iowa Business Report, the Iowa Politics Report come to us from KXEL. And of course, Jeff Stein is the person who's put forward the conspiracy theory that January 6th was all just the worst Cirque du Soleil performance you'll ever see. Hi, Jeff.
You just can't get your tickets at the discount vendor and expect to see a quality show.
Where are the guys on the polls? Well, oh, there they are. All right. They're not using them right,
though. That's a different kind of by the way,
yes,
very nice t-shirt. I appreciate your support of the effort.
Well, of course, this is a t-shirt. I'm wearing a t-shirt from, this is a fundraiser your station did a few years ago for the storms that came through and did a tremendous amount of damage in Iowa.
Yeah, the derechos in August of that year that came through, and derecho was a term nobody really knew, and now we've had, I guess, two or maybe three, depending on how you count them, in a three-year period. So, no, the weather's not changing at all. But, yes, you were kind enough to share information about the fundraiser, and we distributed thousands of dollars to people in rural areas in Iowa adversely affected. So, again, I thank you for that, and I thank you for pulling that out of the closet today.
No problem. I will say this. Tornadoes in Minnesota in December of last year. Yeah. So that's all you need. Yeah, you tell me things are normal. Yeah, right. Okay, so you want my two things that tell me that the Republicans are terrified about what's about to happen tomorrow night. It's twofold. One is the frantic screaming that there is nothing to see here. Very Frank Drebin in front of the exploding fireworks factory. You know, there's nothing to see here. Go home. Nothing here. The other thing is
Frank Drebin reference. Oh, you're making a Frank Drebin reference.
There you go. Drebin is great. Police squad. The other thing that I notice is that every story that can possibly be hyped is, I mean, my God, we have a Hunter Biden caravan heading for the border where they're screaming gay, 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 and they're here to take your guns. I mean, it's, oh my God, they are desperately throwing, and they usually throw a lot at the wall to hope something sticks. They are throwing everything at the wall because I think the reality is they know there is actual evidence here that's not going to be easy for anyone to counterpoint.
So you were watching Newsmax this afternoon then?
No, what was on Newsmax?
No, I don't know. What you were quoting about Hunter Biden and a horde
the Hunter Biden caravan. It's all a bunch of clones of Hunter Biden coming in from Venezuela with a ghost. You know, that's it. Yeah, it's everything there.
It's a tough one for Republicans in this respect. If they pay attention to it, then in their mind, they're giving credence to it. If they don't pay attention to it and hope that Americans on a summer evening in June are doing other things or are worried about pocketbook issues as opposed to January 6th, well, then they could be missing an opportunity to rebut things. So, I mean, it's a tough one because if you say that it has no weight, it has no evidence, it has no merit, well, then why are you talking about it? It just shows then that you potentially are worried about it. Fox has already said they're not going to carry it. But to be fair, they don't carry a lot of breaking news when their highest rated shows are on.
And also should mention many of their evening hosts are actually implicated in some of the correspondence, the text that we've seen from Mark Meadows, that there was some knowledge that they had of what was going on there too. So I think that there's also an element here to try to cover themselves by trying to scream about Hunter Biden caravans.
You know, if I'm Hannity or Carlson you know, maybe I'm taking Thursday night off, even if they're going to run the show. I mean, that's the juxtaposition of that alone is kind of odd, right? Yes. That you're on, you know, I have Dish Network because I live in the country, and so that's how I get my TV. Channel 200 CNN, Channel 205's Fox News, back and forth I go. It might be Hannity on both channels, in which case you'd want to kind of minimize it. What will be interesting to me is if channels like Newsmax or America's Voice, whatever these channels are, if they start carrying it, that then becomes more interesting. But if there is an entire right-wing media blackout on it, then I guess everybody got the same talking point that morning.
OAN, I think, is the one you're talking about there.
There is that one. There's Real America's Voice. Yes. I mean, I don't see them. I don't have them on my system, but I'm sure that if you open up a flip phone, you can probably watch them somewhere.
It should be noted that, and we've talked about this before, and no, we're not talking about, you know, Trump is not about to be thrown out of office. He's already out of office. But we've had, I mean, when I go back to Nixon, 2 days before he was, I think it was 2 days or 3 days before he resigned. He actually was a rally in Indiana, and it was packed to the gills, still a fervent support for him. Many Republicans, after his resignation, screamed how it was unjustified, that he should have still been in office, though the Washington Post was all just a bunch of liberal liars. And, that there was a lot of animosity. So it's not as if, I mean, there's, I think, a tendency when we look back on history to think things go cleanly. There's always going to be the people that are under scrutiny screaming how it's just political, that this is liberal agenda, all these sort of things. But once again, it comes down to we have the evidence. It becomes very difficult for people to, I mean, I think people like, Marjorie Taylor Greene, I think Jim Jordan, stuff like that, they're going to basically just go silent because if it comes out that they were implicated in knowing that this was going to happen, what can they say outside of running to Fox News and screaming it's all a bunch of lies, but then trying to shut everyone else out? Jeff?
I'm right here.
Oh, there you are. Hello. Oh, there you go. There you go. Please go ahead.
No, there was a hiccup on this end, but I got the gist of what you were saying. Look, there's not much they can do except say, look over here at the Hunter Biden caravan or whatever. I mean, here's the dictionary definition of insurrection, and how's that gas at the pump treating you? I mean, about the only thing you can do, Matt, is to deflect, right? I mean, I don't know how else you defend, because I'll tell you, those that are speaking are doing so at great risk of prosecution. And chief among them is Peter Navarro, who still has never met a camera or a microphone that he doesn't like. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I mean, this is uncharted territory. We already know that. But the fact that this hearing is being held literally within, 10 days of the Watergate burglary 50th anniversary is incredible to me. I don't know.
Well, it's been interesting that you've started seeing people put it into perspective. This is the first time in American history that you had a president try to overthrow the results of an election. Now, we could go back to Grant and Rutherford B. Hayes' election. I mean, there clearly were some shenanigans there. But nothing, I mean, as one person said, it's the biggest strike on the U.S. Capitol since the War of 1812. And and you might want to roll your eyes and say that it is, but it's the truth. I mean, what's going to happen is we're going to come pretty darn close to saying, if not for Mike Pence, this country might be a very different landscape right now than it was back then. And I don't know, frankly, I still think to myself that the U.S. military and corporate America, who does not want to see this country get shaken up too bad, would have immediately gone to the Republicans and said, you need to basically put Joe Biden back in office because he won this election, or else you guys are done. I think that was basically, you know, I think that would have happened. But the reality is the way things played out, if not for Mike Pence, that this would be a very different country right now, because they had enough people that were willing to go along with the fraud to justify overturning the election.
There was so much that happened that day that we still don't know about. And I worry that some people got swept up that shouldn't have been swept up. That being said, that's a small little part of it. Any violence upon a government building of any kind is inappropriate. I don't care who's doing it. I don't care what purpose they have. The fact that Mike Pence stood the ground he did continues to this day to maintain a high public profile in Republican politics with the stance he took, and the fact that he's still invited to speak places, I think that gives you a hint of where there is a large pocket of folks. They may not like Pence himself, but they like what he did. They are still supporting him because, again, it's sort of the redemption tour. But that gives you some suggestion of where the party might go post-Trump, whether that's in 2023 if he does not run, or 2024 after that general election.
The Proud Boys, we had, what, 5 members of the Proud Boys that were indicted on sedition, which is a pretty dang serious charge at this point, and tells me that if you're bringing that charge, you've got pretty much the evidence you feel as if to prove the case. We know the pieces. You and I have talked about this for a year and a half now. We know the pieces. We know Roger Stone was talking. We know he was talking to Oath Keepers and the Proud Boys. Roger Stone's a direct communication to the White House. Rudy Giuliani was talking with Roger Stone. It was part of that headquarters area in the hotels, which, by the way, were one or two ballrooms down from where these Proud Boys and guys were organizing. That there were discussions beforehand. I mean, Secret Service was saying, hey, by the way, you guys know there's something's going on here tomorrow. People knew this was coming. We now are getting transcripts that people 4 or 5 days beforehand were referring to what was going to happen on January 6th. This, we know all the pieces. This is what I'm going to presume is going to happen on Thursday, is the connect the dots is going to happen. And here we got from point A to point B, from the White House down to the Proud Boys, how everything got there.
There's no point of having a primetime hearing unless you intend to do that.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, that's exactly.
You can look back at historic events in Congress. Again, Watergate, impeachment of Clinton, impeachment of Trump. These hearings that were held were never scheduled for prime time. The Clarence Thomas confirmation hearings, another example. Some of those hearings extended into the evening hours, but they were never scheduled in prime time. That, to me, is a huge thing. And it either means that the Democrats are going way over their skis, or else they've got something that they really want to make sure no one misses.
And here's, and by the way,
thing that I can't figure out in tied to that, though.
What?
Who released the information that they hired the former president of ABC News to, quote, produce the event? Why was that announced at all? Because all you did was give the people on the right the chance to dismiss it as Hollywood. Why was that even mentioned?
Well,
we're having a hearing and it convenes at 8 o'clock Eastern.
It's because, and I'll say this about bringing in something else, who is the actor that went over to talk at the White House yesterday?
Matthew McConaughey.
When he's out
there, I'm the pop culture guy all of a sudden.
Well, no, it's just
the pop culture guy.
I know. I am sorry. My bad. But McConaughey goes out there and he starts talking about the gun violence, and the Newsmax guy goes after him. The Fox News person goes after him. He was from Uvalde, and so he does definitely have a relationship here. And just to dismiss it as saying, you know, I think what they're saying is they're doing this. Now, I understand what you're saying. And trust me, any Republican looking for a toehold on that cliff to basically be able to scream illegitimate is there. Here's where the problem comes in. I guarantee you, Kitzinger and Cheney would not be going along with this if they thought this was truly just a dog and pony show and thought that this was just a bunch of Republican lies or Democratic lies, liberal lies made up. Cheney herself has been clearly livid at what has been discovered here going on. And I think there's, and as at the end of the day, the only answer the Republicans have to Kitzinger and Cheney is they're not really Republicans. But the reality is they are Republicans. They're on this committee. And they haven't like run from this committee hearing saying, oh, I'm done with this because these guys are just making stuff up. As a matter of fact, some of the comments coming out have come, the harshest comments coming out have come from them.
Well, here's the thing. There is nothing more dangerous than someone who is not running for re-election and hates your guts. That'd be Kinzinger, right? He's not running for re-election. What does he have to lose? Cheney is so far behind. And that doesn't mean that she won't win, because especially if crossovers, okay, that name still means an awful lot in that state. And if, in fact, she looks at her political career being torpedoed because of this and the Trump factor, well, of course, she's going to strike out twice as hard. So they're not going to do anything that doesn't go in line with what they have discovered. The vehemence under which they're taking it, or by which they're taking it, that does tell you that, yeah, they've got an axe to grind, but they've got a pretty big axe. And that's the key to this whole thing, is if, in fact, things are just being laid out very methodically. This is the trick on this. The connecting the dots cannot get caught in the weeds. It has got to be elemental PowerPoint-type bullet points,
yep,
so that it is unmistakable. And then all you have are people who say, yeah, but did you see what gas prices are? That's what you need.
Well, and the real question here is this. If they do that, they could connect the dots,
yeah,
how many Republican congressional people and senators are going to be dragged into this? And all of a sudden, because, as you know, it's clear some of them were involved, and all of a sudden you're going to have, if you have 20 House Republicans and 5 House senators or Republican senators that are out there, you know, definitively, oh, here's their text message saying, see you at the riot. You know, it's if you've got that kind of evidence against them, where does the Republican Party go with that? Because now all of a sudden you've got candidates on your ballot who basically try to overthrow the government.
See you at the riot.
See, these guys are not smart. Sure, what? They might not say that in there, but they pretty
what
much
said it. What emoji do you use after see you at the riot? I'm just not sure I have that on my phone, and that's probably good that I don't. But no, this is the thing. Now notice what happened. And I don't have the name. There was a New York member of Congress, Republican, running for re-election. He dared to speak in public.
Oh, Buffalo. Yeah, Buffalo guy.
You know, maybe we should do something about guns. The backlash was so severe, he had to drop out of the race. So I get a sense that, and this is the opposite side of it, but I have a feeling that those who are controlling the party at the moment will cut loose anybody who is in any way a risk to drag down the whole ticket, the whole party. And so you might find a surprising amount of cut bait, right, on some of these people. It's interesting, though, you notice that Kevin McCarthy is not going to be prosecuted for contempt of Congress.
Yeah, I saw that.
I find that interesting because it suggests a narrowing, if you will.
Navarro definitively him. Yeah, no, there's something there. I agree with you there.
Yeah, and so what I'm saying is, the net of members of Congress who may be involved may not be cast as broadly as you might think, but it might. All you need are 2 or 3 really key names, and that changes, Matt, the whole narrative.
Yeah, very much. We got to take a break. We'll take a break. Yeah. Come on back. 952-946-6205. Jeff Stein joining us on a Wednesday. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the Progressive Voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show. By the way, you can watch Stein. It's on the live stream of the show. Go to Facebook, go to AM 950 Radio or Progressive Citizen X Matt McNeil Show. You can watch us there. It's double your pleasure. Now, Jeff, here is the strategy for the Republicans. If you really, if I was them, okay. Hide Trump's phones, keep him, take him to Antarctica and lock him in a shed for about a month. Okay, just get him out of the way. Don't have him demanding people defend him. Don't have him going out there and making any statements whatsoever. The Republican Party gets really quiet. And even if there is, oh my God, did you see what they uncovered? There clearly was this conspiracy. what the Republicans know, and this is kind of what you're alluding to, is that Democratic outrage lasts basically about a month, and then it starts going away. And so they could end up just basically by being quiet, not saying a thing about it. Then all of a sudden comes September 1st. It's like, why are you guys still talking about January 6th? We're moving on to other issues. And considering the fact that outrage in the Democratic Party just does not seem to last, and a lot of Democrats don't have the courage, frankly, to go on out there and say, lock them up, that basically they're saying, yeah, we'll weather this just fine.
And now the former president is summering in New Jersey. There's a sentence that I just don't even know. Whatever. But he's spending the summer in New Jersey.
Is he? Did they just announce that?
Yeah, the other day. It's like he's moved to Bedminster for the summer. I don't know. I
mean, makes it easy for the Manhattan DA.
I did not. It's more convenient. And again, that message had a little riot emoji afterwards.
Oh, did it? Okay.
Yeah, that way. But no, you're exactly right. And this is what's interesting about this. Apparently, this is going to be the first of a series of hearings, perhaps depending on how well received they are by the public. I just don't know why it's now. If you did this after Labor Day, of course you're going to be accused of October surprise, but facts is facts. And instead, what's going to happen is you're going to divide the Democrat anger because they're going to have this hearing, and then what'll happen next week? Roe will be overturned. Nobody will remember this hearing. It's sort of like maybe you need to take care of one thing before the next thing and stagger it so that you don't run out of energy. Because I think you're right. The anger only goes so long.
Here's the thing. The Republicans, if they were running this, if this was the opposite way, they'd have primetime hearings. They'd have 8 investigations going on. It'd be going every day until the election. And then they just stop talking about it like Hillary's emails. That's kind of why they're doing it. But I agree with you. I think the Democrats better have the goods, because if they don't, this is not going to look too good for them. But frankly, I think they got the goods. Jeff's books are at Next Chapter Books, totallyiowa.com. We'll talk next week, Jeff. I'll post all this later. Hour 2 up next. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show. By the way, love that album this came off of. It's a country album, of all things.
What, really?
Yeah. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. Once again, we'll have Jeff up on the interwebs sort of SoundCloud thing where you can listen to that interview at your leisure and curse his name out as we speak, because a lot of people do not like Jeff. I mean, a lot of people. Wow. No, I will say this. Even Jeff, I think, is starting to realize the brevity of what is about to happen. And sure, he does a lot of Republican talking points. I mean, that ABC producer crap. Well, then come on, man. Someone's got to do it, right? You know, it's hey, Brett, we need you to do a TV broadcast for us.
Yeah, I'll get the White House intern in there to help him out with that. Yeah,
Washington D.C. Cable Access 7 presents to you the hearing, C-SPAN 9. Come on, man. You got to do something like that. And by the way, yeah, I think the point at the end there, if the Democrats had done something like this and the Republicans were in charge, there'd be 18 investigations going on right now. It'd be wall-to-wall coverage. Democrats, I will say this, and this goes back to what I was saying earlier, you guys don't know how to control frickin' message to save your butts. But, you know, hey, if you can deliver the goods starting tomorrow night, you can deliver the goods. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. I am getting a little bit bitter about the Democratic message here. You know, it's, and if you're wondering, I'll just say a little inside stuff. I have been trying to get Democrats of the Day all week. I haven't been able to get one. I'll email them and they're like, oh, I don't want to talk, or I didn't get the message. And it's like, Jesus. If there was a brand new Republican candidate running in the very northwestern part of the state and got a call from a radio station in the very southeastern part of the state, 9 hours separate between the two points, and they say, would you do a radio interview? They say, when and where? And I just is like, you know, you guys, you got your bases out here. You guys, don't be afraid. For God's sakes, you're the party of healthcare. You're the party of the best freaking infrastructure bill out there. You're fighting for women's rights and Roe v. Wade. For God's sakes, The Republicans are still saying any response to a school shooting is knee-jerk after 12 years after Columbine, for God's sakes. You guys have the platform to win and kick ass. Start acting like it, for God's sakes. Just get, I've written a strongly worded memo. Dear God, you know what? If they bring up if they bring up police, they bring up gas prices, have an answer ready and go. You know what we need to do? The Democrats, what was it? The Democrats voted in unison to stop gouging gas prices. Every Republican voted against it. Where's the press release? Every Democrat should be hitting every freaking news channel with that. Every Republican voted against holding people who are gouging people for gas prices accountable. You guys are doing the right things. It's just you got no damn follow through because you act like, going out there and praising yourself is, we need to be modest. We shouldn't be doing that.
Yeah, the gas price is a huge issue, and you would think they would be hammering the oil companies who are sitting on barrels of oil. I forgot how many they have.
Record profits. Yeah, right. Record profits. They've got they say, we got all these leases, but they're garbage. Okay, well, then give them back. And they won't. You know why? Because most of those leases are not garbage. They got tons of oil under there. It's just they want to get access to all the oil before that they'll, I guess we'll do it. And they'll never lower the price anyway because they're greedy bastards. That's why.
And you got speculators, too, that are also bumping up the price.
Exactly.
That's certainly not helping. And we have no messaging from Democrats on that.
Well, yeah,
I guess
exactly.
We can't do anything about gas.
We don't want to talk about that. People are angry. Get out there and freaking fight, for God's sakes. Ilhan Omar at one point said defund the police. Do you really need my help on this? All right. Well, that's Ilhan Omar. If you want to talk to her about that quote, you need to go talk to her. I've not been for that, but I'm for police accountability because you shouldn't have police officers killing people in the streets or, in the case of Jaleel Stallings, beating him senseless after they open fire without announcing who they are, or in the case of Locke basically kicking open a door and firing on a guy in his own place who's carrying a gun because they decided to do a no-knock warrant when no one else wanted to do it. I'm for holding those people accountable. But if you want to go talk about, her policies, you need to go talk to her. And scene. Is it that hard? Really? Is it that hard, guys? You act like, they're going to make me talk about something I don't want to talk about. Freaking find your damn spines and go talk about anything. Find your spines and go talk about anything. Because you know what? If you basically hide and cower and are too afraid to talk about an issue, guess who controls that issue? The right does. So find your freaking big boy pants and go out there, for God's sakes. 952-946-6205. All right, Brett, customer service problems here. Faux pas in both inside world and outside world. Both of these courtesy of Bring Me the News. Just fantastic. The founder of Lynn Hall Restaurants in Minneapolis and Edina has shared an unsavory experience she had with a customer who knocked over a stand full of afternoon tea treats. Ann Spaeth posted on her LinkedIn page on Monday describing the incident that happened at her Edina restaurant at 50th and France, which serves afternoon tea on Saturdays and Sundays. The drama unfolded when a customer arrived for afternoon tea and proceeded to accidentally knock over the three-tier stand containing about $100 worth of pastries, crashing to the ground along with several pieces of china. All right, accident. An accident, Spaeth notes, saying restaurant staff quickly reset the tray for the guests, and they stayed to enjoy the experience. Spaeth goes on to claim that the customer thanked our team as she left the restaurant, but the customer's tone changed 2 days later when Spaeth says she received an email from the woman. The email came with a photo attachment claiming to show the tea stand was not set fully on the table and accusing us of setting her up for a disastrous experience and demanding a full refund. Wow. Spaeth said she declined defending her employees for gracefully resetting her and said because she stayed for afternoon tea, she wasn't entitled to a refund. In response, she was advised to me, I'm just going to let you know you set this afternoon tea tray up inappropriately and it has fallen over. And this is you. You are plotting against me, trying to make me look bad. Really? In response, I advised we would, she basically, so she said she wasn't entitled to a refund. In response, Spaeth was advised we would be destroyed by her on social media to her friends and anyone else she could tell, as well as reported to the Better Business Bureau. Spaeth does not name the customer in question or provide any more clues about the identity. Today I spoke with a guest who joined us. This is the post. I spoke with a guest of her afternoon tea. When she went to sit at her table, she knocked the three-tier stand off the table and sent $100 worth of pastries to the floor along with several pieces of china, and asked and her team quickly reset. 2 days later, received a lengthy email, guest attaching the photo, said fully saw on the table and accusing us of setting up for a disastrous experience. I'm surprised you don't have a lawsuit against you at this point, because some of these people, sometimes they get really litigious. And when did an accident become the need to find fault, berate a service team, and a threat of destroying a business? As a small business owner, I faced two decisions, one to support my team and the other to support my team. Just the other day at the restaurant business. So the Lynn Hall's afternoon cost about, it's $55 for adults, $35 for children. Comes with a selection of sandwiches, pastries, desserts, with one or bubbles as an optional extra. Oh, manservant Claude, bring the car around. I think we know what we're going to be doing on Saturday. But make sure they set that tray somewhere appropriately for me. Wow. Seriously, you know, it happened. I've had embarrassing things happen before. I don't necessarily go on out there and look to blame someone else and ridicule them. I mean, I think the best example of this, I went to a drugstore to go get I was having cold symptoms. They gave me medication. They screwed up my name with someone else, and I got medication that was meant for someone who was recovering from opiate addiction.
Oh, no.
And I took some of the medication, and I'm like, this is really wrong. And immediately called, and you know, someone said to me, "Oh, it's going to be your big payday." It's like, okay, no, I was sick for 2 days. I was sick for 2 days, and I ended up losing up tickets. We were going to go to the Twins game, and then I think we had theater tickets as well. And I said, "I just reimburse me for those things, and we'll be fine." And you know, that's all I wanted. I'm not looking for a payday. You're not paying for my kids' college. Just it was a mistake. I'm not even asking for someone to be fired. Probably trained, sure. But come on, I'm not looking for too much more. And yeah, that was about it. But you know, it's like it happens. Accidents happen. I was fine. I felt bad for 2 days, but I was fine afterwards. I don't think you necessarily have to go and, you know, torch the place to the ground because of that. The second story is an outdoor story. But once again, bad social faux pas here. You don't camp, do you?
I do not, no.
I got enough camping when I was in the military. That forced camping. It kind of works it out of your system real quick, okay? An anonymous Reddit tale told by a first-time visitor to the Boundary Waters canoe area this week has sparked conversation about proper campsite etiquette. The consensus, it's intrusive and a bit odd to roll up to a campsite where a group has already settled in and set up to camp and then set up your own camp 10 feet away from them without saying a word to them.
10 feet, that's
neighborly. Bunk beds or something, yeah. Four women in their late 20s head up to the BWCA. They're enjoying their campsite when two women, presumably a mother and daughter, paddle on up. We say hello with silence as a response, the Reddit writer tells. As the duo pulls into the campsite, they inquire about how many people are in the group and ask directions to the latrine. Upon returning to the routine, they begin unloading and set up their camp. 10 feet to the other side, the writer explains. In most Midwest way possible, one of the girls confronted them about their proximity to our campsite. They said that the site holds 9, which is true, and they don't care if we smoke weed or drink. And that was that. They set it up, and they set up right next to us. Imagine if someone did this at a hotel room. Yeah, where you're not going to use that fold-out couch, are you? Well, there we go. I mean, what's the problem? You can smoke or do weed. I don't care. Now, most BWCA campers agree several severe weather, looming darkness, no availability to other campsites might be reasons to break no social norms and settle in next to other campers. You know, but that was not the case. None of those were the conditions at present. It was a perfect day, she writes, and tons of spots were available, not more than 2 miles away. The post ends with the question, are we crazy for being upset? It's totally cool behavior. Is this totally cool behavior in the DWCA? The top voted reply for this response is, nope, not cool, no, no, no. On Twitter, several responders said the two women's behavior actually violated the permit rules. Others say it wasn't exactly true. The reaching out to the Superior National Forest for comment, this is what they said. Camping in the BWCA is first come, first serve. There's no requirement for the number of parties per site as long as they don't exceed 9 person, 4 watercraft per site, wrote Caroline Torkidson, the public affairs specialist. We encourage all of the visitors to follow leave no trace principles, including be considerate to other visitors. So after all, the fine print doesn't appear to speak directly to the situation like the Reddit story, but pretty much everyone who replied online said it wasn't cool. There's a lot of responses. I'll put the story out there a little bit later on. If you were to come into the camp, so basically what they're saying is they reserved the camp just because they didn't have 9 people in the camp. They only had 4. That's irrelevant. That was their campsite for the night. Now, here is my guess. Either they were concerned about bears or other critters, or they were concerned about men. Because right now it sounds like all 6 people involved here were women. And they didn't want to go to a campsite where there could be some, you know, guys there getting drunk or anything like that. I don't think most people would have a problem if you said, you know, here's the deal. Can we be, you know, not 10 feet? Can we be 40 feet, 50 feet over here with our campsite? We don't want to necessarily risk it. You're already here. And we don't want to necessarily be by ourselves on a campsite. Is it okay if we're there? I think it'd be fine. It's the fact that you don't say anything and you just set up and then act as if you're entitled to it. That's where the problem comes on in. Would you boo them? If they came on, if you were at a campsite, or I mean, well, I guess for you, if you don't go camping, maybe like an RV site, and say you had this one whole pad that you could set up your RV on or something like that, and some guy comes in and jumps on the same pad as you and says, hey, you're not using the whole thing.
Yeah, I might say something in that situation, especially 10 feet if you're camping, and saying, you know, we kind of need this space here. You know, we're trying to have a nice getaway weekend, and could you move a little bit more? If you want to be biased, that's fine, but not 10 feet.
I'll tell you what, 10 feet, you bring up a good point. I'm going to guess from the camera in the studio, would you say about this would be about 10 feet?
Yeah, probably pretty close to it.
Yeah. That's pretty close to set up a tent to someone else.
Yeah, they're getting up in your grill pretty closely there.
You're smelling their deodorant, let's put it that way. It's not exactly a private time there. If you have a specific situation, and once again, there are cases where this is accepted, severe weather, darkness, stuff like that. There are cases where that's the case, no availability of other campsites, but you at least want to be cordial if you're going to basically crash someone else's campsite. You want to be somewhat cordial, you'd think. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205 is the phone number. Let's take a break. Come on back. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205 is the phone number. Am I crazy or, yeah, it looks like Todd Colet is headed for Ukraine. of course, this is the guy that has sponsored us here at AM 950. I'm trying to find the post he put out there. Where he basically, yeah, he's in Warsaw, the train station there, and he's going to take the train to Kyiv.
Really?
And he's going to go out there and volunteer and help out. And yeah, it's yeah. He's out there, and wow, that's you know, helping out, volunteering there. That's just amazing. And I'll see if I'll track down the big picture of him where he was in the train station. It's a lot of people have done that, have gone over there and have you know put it forward and you know put themselves on the line to try to help out. And you know, Todd has been one of the things. Of course, he sponsors us here at AM 950. He's also been trying to help out his friend Paul Nyland over there, who is in Kyiv running with Lifeline Ukraine. And Lifeline Ukraine is an organization that is basically trying to deal with mental health and crises and suicide prevention in Ukraine. And obviously, we're talking about a horrific situation out there, where there's been a lot of things going on, a lot of bad things that have been going on out there. So, you know, I think it might have been on Facebook. I saw this. Yeah, here it is. I just boarded in Barcelona for Warsaw. I'll take a 19-hour train to Kyiv tomorrow. I'm planning to support the war effort in a civilian capacity. I depart Kyiv on June 24th. Glory to Ukraine. That's hardcore, man.
Absolutely, yeah.
That's hardcore.
Todd Colin, for sure. Absolutely.
You can help out Todd's cause out there. I'm going to see if we can try to get him on the phone next week. I don't know how easy it is to get a call out of Ukraine. I'm going to see if I can try to get him on the phone and find out what's going on the ground out there. If you can, help out Lifeline Ukraine. Clearly a major problem. Mental health issues, suicide prevention. Lifeline Ukraine is trying to help both of those cases. You can go to their Patreon, and there's a Patreon page. I'll link to all that a little bit later on. Help out if you can. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205 is the phone number. Let us go right now into the coronavirus update. Wednesday's COVID-19 update from the Minnesota Department of Health includes 1,375 newly reported cases, 10 reported deaths, another double-digit day on deaths. State's COVID death toll now is 12,692. According to the latest wastewater data from the Met Council, which covers two-thirds of the Twin Cities Metro, the most prevalent strain in coronavirus samples is subvariant BA2121, subvariants BA4, BA5. They're still at 23% of the samples that they took. Through June 7th, the number of people with COVID-19 hospitalized in Minnesota was 422, up from 400 on June 6th. Of those hospitalized, 47 people in intensive care, that's up from 38, and 375 in non-ICU care, that's up from 362. As of June 16th, the state reported 3,918,937 people received at least one dose of the COVID vaccine. 3,714,774 people have completed the vaccine series. There are 2,438,022 Minnesotans who are up to date with their vaccine shots, which includes boosters. 1,523,307 is the total number of cases, and once again, that is grossly undercounted. Here is where one bit of good news comes in. It took more than a year, but Minnesotans who keep going to work in person at the height of the COVID-19 pandemic can start now applying Wednesday for bonus checks as recognition for their work. The state's online portal to apply for Hero Pay goes live at 8 a.m. today. It will stay open for 45 days to allow the hundreds of thousands of state workers who are eligible for the checks to apply. Governor Walz says he expects a rush of people right away. It's not first come, first serve. It's 45 days. You can sign up anytime in those 45 days, Walz said. One day before the launch, we have learned anything from the Minnesota licensing and registration system and vaccinations. Every person in Minnesota will sign up at 8 a.m. tomorrow at the exact same time. But he did add that confidence level is high, that the state can handle the influx of applications. Navigators and customer service representatives will be in place to help people get signed up. State officials estimate 100,000 workers will get roughly $750 each. But that could change depending on how many people apply. The $500 million agreed to by lawmakers in April will be split evenly among approved applicants, with checks no higher than $1,500 after the 45-day application period closes. There's also a two-week period to appeal and review denied applications. Eligible workers include those in healthcare, including long-term care and home care, the courts, child care, public schools, retail, food service, public transit, and manufacturing. We were here every day.
I was going to sarcastically ask, when do we get paid? Yeah, we're heroes.
First of all, no, we're not. we did do the shows here live just because, and we had discussions about should we do them remotely, but the reality is that we could do them live here, and we actually had different ways into the studio to avoid hitting, you know, meeting up with each other. This is pre-vaccination days, 2020. And so I've been spraying Lysol down in this studio for 2.5 years now. Wow. Anyway, but we managed to keep it safe. No, media should not be on there because, okay, first of all, it's a good gig, man. it's a good gig. We're not exactly working the punch press. How about we say it like that? There's a lot of people out there. The retail, I'm praying that means grocery store workers. Because for me, those were the workers that were, you know, low income workers that were truly the front line pre-vaccine, and they went in and they worked and they were on the front line as people needed food, and God bless them and bless them. They deserve these bonuses. It's the least we can do for them. I'm not saying that there weren't others. I mean, the child care providers, how about them? The court system. Yeah, no, I 100%. There's a lot of people that deserve this, but that grocery store workers, that is a group of people that the Republicans have purposely tried to omit from these bonuses, and they deserve. The big sign is not enough. Remember that? They put up the big sign, and I said back then, I said, that's fine. It just is that shouldn't be all that you give them, because all that is a sign. You need to give them something more. So I'm hoping the grocery store workers get in on this too. They deserve it for sure. So it's open. You got 45 days. Please apply. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. Another home run out of the park. Not by the New York Yankees, although they're pretty good at that. No, this is by Dina Winter at the Minnesota Reformer. Another exceptional article about what's going on in the Minneapolis Police Department. We'll talk about that when we come back. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. Okay, there are three weekend shows. I love all of our weekend shows, but there are three weekend shows. If they want me to show up on them, I'll be in there in a heartbeat. Bakken, Greg Bakken, and the spooky time hour. Metza, I mean, just because I love Paul Metza, and his shows are fantastic. That Up North podcast, man. They want me on that show, man. I'll be on that.
You got to travel a little bit. They are up in Wisconsin, but.
No, we have a. Have you seen these things? They're called phones.
Oh, phones! Yeah. Yes, you're right.
Dear Lord,
we are in the 21st century.
You make me move. My God, I don't even want to hit respond on this thing when someone calls me. You should know I don't want to talk to you. No, 952-946-6205. Welcome to the party, pal. Nice to have you guys with us. 9 o'clock Saturday nights, I believe that was 9 o'clock Saturday nights.
Yeah, indeed. Yeah, first episode was last week, so keep. Keep on listening. It's a good show.
Once again, Dina Winter this time. Minnesota Reformers writers are just exceptional, and they're finding the stories that no one else is covering. Mannix is doing all he can out there. Andy Mannix is doing everything he can. But, you know, I dream of a day when we had newspapers that had, you know, journalistic coverage like this. Here is the story. It's a little bit long here, but I'm going to go through this. Even after Dustin Dupree was arrested in 2003 for assaulting his ex-wife, he kept his job as a Minneapolis police officer. Even after he was charged with puncturing a woman's tire outside of a Target in Cottage Grove in 2017 in a fit of road rage, he kept his job. He persisted through at least six misconduct complaints, three sustained. And even after being fired by former Minneapolis Police Chief Arredondo in 2019, Dupree got his job back with the help of the police union. None of that ended his career. None of that. Beating his ex-wife? Fine. Minneapolis cop says, come on back in. Puncturing someone, a police officer in a road rage incident, puncturing someone's tire. Minneapolis cops, hey, you're our kind of cop, man. Even after fired, the union's like, nope, get back in here. None of that ended his career until last year. Then after 23 years, he left the department with a $175,000 workers' comp claim from the city. Settlement from the city, I should say. Dupree, D-U-P-R-E, is, I think, Dupree or is that dumbass? Oh, Dupree. It's Dupree. I don't have any problem calling this guy, this jackass out. My God. Dupree is one of 139 Minneapolis cops with misconduct complaints out of 144 who have received workers' compensation settlements since George Floyd was killed by the police 2 years ago. And they're getting six-figure settlements on their way out the door. Reached by phone, the jackass Dupree declined to comment. And by the way, yes, jackass if you beat your ex-wife. Jackass if you knife someone's tires. Yeah, that's I think that's technically jackasses. Can we check the dictionary definition of that? Let me know if that's wrong. Since Floyd's murder, the city of Minneapolis has paid more than $22.2 million in workers' comp settlements to police officers, according to the city records reviewed by the Reformer. By the way, still not as much as one settlement they paid to a family of a victim of the Minneapolis police's actions. Even with all that insane amount of money, $22.2 million, they've actually had payouts to victims of Minneapolis police actions that have been more. Wow. Employees who retire early due to disability can get paid 60% of their salary, tax-free until age 55. The state is paying more than $875,000 per month in those disability pensions and 169 former Minneapolis police officers who retired since Floyd's murder. About 80% of Minneapolis officers sought disability pensions due to post-traumatic stress syndrome. You feel bad because you were doing something bad to the people of Minneapolis? I'm just asking. That's the question. That's according to the Minneapolis Public Employees Retirement Association. Roughly 96% of the Minneapolis cops who have received workers' compensation settlements had misconduct complaints filed against them, but just one-third of those had a complaint sustained. But that's not unusual. Most misconduct complaints are dismissed or closed, even in cases where the city settled lawsuits or the officers were convicted of crimes in connection with the complaints. So they're only, you say, well, only a third of them, Matt, you know, the cop defenders, there's only a third of them. Yeah, but there's a lot of cases that apparently get dropped, even though the city has to pay out for that police officer's actions. Or the cop was actually convicted of a crime due to those actions. They closed those cases there. A 2020 Reformer investigation found that the department is slow to investigate complaints. Slow is not the word. Glacial is the word. God. They are slow to investigate complaints to mete out sanctions, and even when the officers are credibly accused of serious wrongdoing. Workers' comp settlements have gone to an officer with 10 sustained complaints, an officer accused of tasing a pregnant woman, and another who was accused of fondling a masseuse while working undercover during a prostitution investigation. We are paying these people, an officer with 10 sustained complaints, an officer who tased a pregnant woman, and an officer who fondled a masseuse while working undercover have all gotten workers' comp settlements from the city of Minneapolis. Wow. The workers' comp settlements are part of a massive wave of resignations and retirements, reducing MPD's headcount by about 300 officers, leading to a surge of overtime spending. Some elected officials are disturbed, but open investigations and complaints are effectively swept under the rug when an officer leaves the department. Jamie Long, the DFLer from Minneapolis, said a number of MPD officers with pending discipline have retired early due to disability, which shortcuts the disciplinary process. Last year, 52 officers with pending complaints, 18 in 2020 and 4 in 2019. Once an officer leaves, the cases are closed with no discipline. Wow. Wow. Thank God. I remember last year in that election. Oh, don't you remember the police and Mayor Fry talking about, we're going to have some real accountability. Don't pass this constitutional amendment. We are going to get real responsibility. We'll hold people accountable. Remember all that? The lies. They're not holding anyone accountable. So far, to my knowledge, only one police officer has been held accountable for anything involved with George Floyd, including things such as the Stallings case or targeting the media. But the one person who talked to the media, well, they got a harsh penalty because the Minneapolis cops are horrible. Horrible. If a disability determination is made before there's a decision on discipline, that's problematic, Long said. I think if there's a disciplinary proceeding, that should proceed separately from any determination about an officer's ability to work. Wow, that would be called common sense. Because it would seem to me that if you can actually get your workers' comp settlement before any of the disciplinary charges are finished, it would seem like that's almost an incentive for a police officer to basically flee the department with a workers' with a big paycheck as opposed to actually being held accountable for their actions. It seems like a really kind of a no-brainer sort of thing. Long sponsored legislation this year that would require officers to get treatment for PTSD in order to get workers' compensation benefits or apply for state disability benefits, pensions rather. The session ended without the bill passing. In 2019, state law was amended to say that a public safety worker is diagnosed with PTSD, it's presumed to be job-related with regard to workers' compensation benefits. Police advocates and workers' comp attorneys say years of traumatic police work combined with the trauma of Floyd's aftermath combined to drive plenty of good officers out of the profession. Have you seen what you guys did to the people of Minneapolis? You want to talk about PTSD? Have you seen what you guys did to those people? Oh, my God. Oh, but if they claim PTSD, then they're charlatans. They're making it up. They're not really sick. But when you, it's, we got a boo-boo. I see how this goes. Lindsay Rowland, the attorney for the Musser Law Firm, which has handled the majority of workers' comp cases in the Minneapolis Police Department officers. By the time they come to my office, they're broken, she said. The PTSD is real, she said. Her office sometimes gets calls from clients wanting to know the legal ramifications if they commit suicide. A number of MPD cops were leaving the city with a trail of lawsuit settlements, misconduct complaints, and police brutality allegations. Minneapolis Chief Financial Officer Dushani Dye said misconduct is in an employee's past is not legally relevant to whether the city has to pay workers' comp benefits. The city evaluates every claim and decides based on the facts, the law, and the city's potential liability. Often settlements are reached where lump sums are paid out for a fraction of the expected liability, Dye said in a statement. Over the course of Tyrone Barzee's 12-year MPD career, he racked up six lawsuits that cost the city more than $344,000. Or in Minneapolis, as they know it over there, quality police work. In 2014, Barzee was caught on video tackling a man who had been collecting signatures for a voting rights petition. Jesus Christ. Oh, witnesses said Barzee threatened to shoot them when they tried to intervene. Oh, so linebacker Jones over here sees someone with a petition, tackles them, and people are like, what are you doing? And he pulls the gun. And did he pull the gun? It doesn't say. Barzee, who at one time was a school resource officer. Wow, go watch John Oliver's Last Week Tonight from this last week, by the way. Was also sued for choking an 18-year-old developmentally disabled student, causing him to lose consciousness when he refused to be stand up to be searched. The city settled with the student for $140,000. Once again, fine police work, considering the Minneapolis Police Department choked the child. So we're not talking that he did a, you know, just one of those and let go. I mean, he grabbed on tight to cut off blood air to this child for, I'm going to guess, 60 seconds for the child to lose consciousness. God, these cops suck. And once again, my disclaimer, police officers, I know the first thing that people are going to say is, he hates all cops. No. Most of you guys are brilliant. Most of you guys are brilliant. Sure, we do the, you know, bad apple in the bunch more than I like to do. But I have no reason to question the police departments of St. Paul, Bloomington, Rochester, Duluth, Minnetonka, Maple Grove, Woodbury. I have no reason to question any of them. But the Minneapolis cops, even you have got to admit, there is a rot and a stench to that department which is unbelievable. Courtesy of the police union and the leaders of that god-awful organization. God, just stinks. Barzi was also sued for punching a Maple Grove woman in the face, knocking her unconscious when she tried to record him with a cell phone as he responded to a dispute over a cab fare in 2014. The city paid, once again, guilty because the city paid $82,000 for that, according to the Star Tribune. He was also sued for pepper spraying a general manager of an uptown bar while working off duty, for which the city settled for more than $34,000. And the city settled for $62,500 when he was sued for beating a man unconscious outside of a dinkytown bar, according to the Star Tribune. His file contains at least 17 misconduct complaints, four of which were sustained and resulted in discipline. He got a disability pension, is receiving more than $56,000 a year in pension benefits, and received a $195,000 worker comp settlement from the city on that. Worker comp settlements went down to two of three Minneapolis police officers cited for assault, disorderly conduct, and criminal damage to property in 2012 in connection to a racially charged bar fight while off duty in Apple Valley. So not while they were working, but the city is paying for it. Andrew Allen and Christopher Bennett were alleged to have joined a group of white men who followed a group of black men into the bar parking lot, knocked one of them on the ground, and beat him while hurling racial slurs. Quality police work, considering the Minneapolis Police Department. Charges against Allen were dropped, and Bennett pled guilty to disorderly conduct, was suspended, but stayed on the force until last year. Bennett had 16 misconduct complaints in his file, three sustained. Allen had nine complaints, none of them sustained. Bennett was settled with his workers' comp claim with the city for $175,000. Allen settled for $170,000. Bennett is currently receiving a $57,000 per year in disability pension benefits. Allen, more than $52,000. That's a lot of money to be able to spend to learn all more racial swears, you know? You utter effing pigs. Bennett and Allen, you guys just are jackass central, aren't you? Jesus Christ. And you did this off duty, but you're getting a paycheck for it, huh? Sweet Lord. Or is that not the PTSD? I don't know. What's your PTSD from? You know, were you one of the cops that shot at the media members? Were you one of the cops that beat Jaleel Steelings in the street? Is that why you got PTSD? Just asking. I don't know where your PTSD comes from. But I know what. You're pieces of trash. That's what I can tell you for sure. I'll take a break. Come on back. More when we do return. More when we do return. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. Brett and I talking to the break. It just never ends with the Minneapolis police, does it? Just never ends. How about the case of Andrew Stender? Was one of the five police officers on a SWAT team that shot Terrence Franklin 10 times in the basement of his uptown home in 2013. A grand jury decided not to indict the officers, but a video obtained from Time magazine raised new questions about the police version of what happened. The Star Tribune reported in November that Stender and two other officers involved have now retained lawyers and were talking to county prosecutors. Stender was also accused of harassing Officer Yvonne Bonnie Edwards over the course of 4 years while working in the canine unit, where Stender was a supervisor. The city council approved a $225,000 settlement with Edwards, which means they had plenty of evidence, because you don't settle for that much money unless you had mountains of evidence against Stender. Former MPD Police Chief Arredondo demoted Stender from sergeant to officer 1 year ago and 2.5 years after the city began investigating Edwards' harassment claims. His file contains 23 misconduct complaints, two of them sustained. The city council approved a $195,000 worker comp settlement for him in October, and he left the department in February. He's also receiving more than $128,000 a year in disability pension benefits, according to PIRA. Wow. In 2016, Alexander Brown, another officer, punched a handcuffed Native American man in the face, breaking his nose, possibly causing traumatic brain injury, according to discipline documents. The officers also put a spit hood over his head, and then an EMT injected him with ketamine. Doctors had to intubate the man to keep him breathing, according to arbitration documents. Brown was fired over it, then he sued the city, claiming it agreed to hire him and then backed out of the deal, according to the Star Tribune. He got his job back. Wow. And last year, he won $175,000 workers' comp settlement with the city. He's getting more than $46,000 annually in early retirement benefits. What has the city done for the poor Native American man that these guys abused? Anything there? City was sued when Craig Taylor was accused of hitting a bystander while executing a 2008 search warrant. He hit the man so hard that the man lost control of his bowels. The city paid nearly $500,000 to settle a federal lawsuit there. Taylor received $175,000 worker comp settlement and receiving more than $73,000 per year in disability pension benefits. The city was sued when Sherry Appledorn was accused of stomping on a man's back, kicking him a dozen times, and using a taser on him twice while apprehending a car break-in suspect in 2008. The city settled with the man for $125,000. Appledorn, who has a lengthy complaint file, received $160,000 in worker comp settlement. Thomas Bernardson is accused of punching a man so hard he suffered a concussion. He was convicted of misdemeanor fifth-degree assault, and the MPD suspended him, but he kept his state license and his job. Bernardson received $175,000 in workers' comp settlement. Council members Jeremiah Ellison has said the council has been advised to approve the settlements because taking the cases to trial would be even more expensive. Jim Mortensen, executive director of Law Enforcement Labor Services, the largest union representing Minnesota law enforcement, said with about 300 police officers have gone since Floyd, the city doesn't have enough attorneys to deal with the workers' comp cases. And if they take a case to court rather than settle, there's no guarantee the city would win and they could end up paying more. Council member Robin Wollerbach said the council has been advised by the city attorney's office that they were kind of stuck and it's just better to settle the cases. So, this is what Mayor Fry, the city of Minneapolis, the police union, the police department, when they were all begging and pleading with the voters of Minneapolis to not tear down the current Minneapolis Police Department and rebuild it from scratch, this is what they call accountability. This constant drain of taxpayer dollars for absolute freaking scum of the earth that use their badge as a weapon with glee over and over and over again in many cases. This is what they call accountability. Don't change us. We're going to install accountability. If you put the ballot initiative back on the ballot this time around, the more of this stuff we hear, the more likely it is to get passed. So, there you go. That is just, ugh, God. It just keeps getting worse. Native Roots Radio, that's coming up next. Have a good one. We're back tomorrow. Till then, see ya.